This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, website, portfolio, or an online store. Create your own space today by visiting squarespace.com and use offer code TREK9 to save 10%. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our new alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
I'm Jeff Combs. I'm everywhere on Star Trek, and you keep tuning in to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 113, Date Recollection Savant. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me this week is Charlene Schmidt. We'll be finding out what Gates McFadden and Brent Spiner have brewing on stage, debating which Trek series has the best theme music, and looking at Bruce E. Drushel's new anthology, Fan Phenomena, Star Trek. Then in the feature, we're joined by Philip Gilfus and Daniel Prue to discuss the Voyager conspiracy. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Char. It's great to have you back with me on The Ready Room, co-hosting for Voyager Week. How's everything going there? You guys had a big weekend in Fargo this weekend, didn't you?
Yes, indeed we did. We had some really important sports ball show come to town. Maybe you know something about this, like college football game day.
Oh, that's ESPN sports ball day.
Is that what it is? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a very big deal. A lot of people filled up downtown Fargo for the show, showed off their bison pride, and it was very cool. The whole city was just electric with energy about the whole thing.
I noticed there that you said bison, and I heard that people up there get really upset if you call them the North Dakota bison.
That's right.
With an S.
And I've lived here for almost 2 years, and I still don't understand the distinction. All I know is that is the rule. They are not bison like they would be anywhere else. They are bison.
Bison. Okay. Well, as you know, I lived for a while in Nevada. And if you want to make a Nevadan angry, call the state Nevada.
Okay.
That really upsets them. So,
all right. Yeah. Noted. I'll do that the next time I'm in Vegas.
Do you remember in 2002, I think it was, where they had that Ben Affleck series called Push Nevada on ABC, and they did the promotions for it, and it was all Push Nevada, Push Nevada, and the Nevada Travel Commission or agency, whatever the actual title of that group is, complained to ABC, and they had to actually re-record and redo all the promotions with the proper pronunciation of the state.
Oops.
People were upset.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's just lead in. You know, I think that will be absolutely not the perfect transition into our first story today, which is about Gates, not Gates McFadden, but Gates McFadden, and how she is using Vine to promote the latest production that she's doing there with Ensemble Studio Theater in Los Angeles, and she's teaming back up with her old pal from The Next Generation, Brent Spiner.
Right, who played Data, not Data.
That's right. What's the difference?
Well, according to Dr. Pulaski, there isn't. But according to Data, one is his name.
Can you imagine Dr. Pulaski going on vacation to Nevada?
Oh,
and,
dear.
And saying Nevada and getting into that same argument, just like she
make?
Did with Data?
One is the state's name. The other is not.
Exactly. So, Char, tell us what Gates is doing here with Vine, what she's doing with this trunk sale that I've heard about. I've seen some photos on her Twitter feed, and then this thing she's doing with Brent.
Yeah, okay. She, ever since Gates McFadden came onto social media, I mean, she joined Twitter only a few months ago, she's been really active to promote Ensemble Studio Theater in L.A. because she is the she is the director, the artistic director of right. the whole thing. So
she's not the only director, though. If you remember the story recently, a 1/8 Beverly is also a director. Apparently.
Oh, that's true. She's the co-director. And we're not really sure who's really running the show, because as we know, 1/8,
right.
she's always up to something. Yeah.
She is. Wow.
Yes, yes.
Talk about selfies. My goodness.
Oh, man. Yeah, she gives it a whole new meaning. Yeah. So when 1/8 has not taken over Gates McFadden's account, she is doing a series of auctions of TNG-era memorabilia and putting it on sale on eBay. And then the proceeds go to benefit the theater, which is kind of cool. So if you want, say, a signed script or something that's a part of the show, I mean, I know she's auctioned off communicators, props, all sorts of stuff, photos, very cool stuff. A lot of it is rare stuff that you can't really get from anybody else but her.
Right. She apparently kept a lot of stuff, because I was watching the cast reunion on the Enterprise Season 2 Blu-rays, and they all ask each other, like, what did you keep from the show? And, like, Jolene Blaylock, I think, kept nothing.
Oh, wow.
She finally got a couple of things through some other channels later. But most of the cast, I kept, like, one thing or two things. That was kind of it. So she apparently has a lot of stuff.
Well, she might have been hoarding it a little bit, because she has said on Twitter before that she had a whole storage unit full of this stuff.
Right. Well, that's where 1/8 was living for a long time.
That exactly. Yeah. And then she finally revived 1/8, and, well, it's all been crazy shenanigans ever since. But anyway, so that's what the eBay auctions are about. Now, as for these vines, these are hilarious. You can tell that she and Brent Spiner and the other stars of this production, they're all just having a good time. They're having fun with it. And a lot of it is basically poking fun at Brent and making fun of him. And if you just go to Gates McFadden's Twitter account, you can see the vines. You can see other photos, too, of them, you know, pretend beating each other up, and then there's another photo where their hands are just on the table, and they're, you know, just, oh, God, what do we do? This is hopeless. And the joke is that Brent is absolutely horrible to work with, and that sort of thing. It's great.
I could tell. The whole TNG cast apparently were horrible to work with, because those guys just don't get along. They really just don't like each other.
Yeah, they had no fun on that set whatsoever. And they all hate each other
much. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's cool that she's using Vine. Now, I'm not a big fan of Vine. Actually, I don't use it, and I don't know what I would use it for, really. I mean, I can think of some marketing uses for it, the way that she is here, which is what I think is really cool. From a personal level, I don't know what I would ever want to share on there. But it's nice to see people who have been in the industry, as we watch Hollywood, as we watch the studios, like, really, really struggle to think in modern day terms about the things that they do. It's nice to see people who have been in the industry for that long taking this new technology and finding a way to use it to promote what they're doing. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And just in case people don't know much about Ensemble Studio Theater in LA, this is a nonprofit theater. So it's not like she's making tons and tons of money. These are very short-running productions, it sounds like. Like this one with Brent Spiner, it's called The Last Look Back, and it's only going on stage for 2 days. So a lot of work is going into a very short-run production, and so it is cool to see them being creative, essentially using free market tools to promote a production like this.
Exactly, yeah. So go check it out if you're interested. You can go to ensemblesstudiotheaterla.org, and we'll put a link in the show notes. And again, the production is called The Last Look Back, starring Brent Spiner. Gates McFadden is directing, and it's going to be October 4th and 5th at the Ensemble Studio Theater in LA. If you happen to be in the LA area and you want to check it out, that would be cool. If you do, let us know what you think about it, because obviously there's no way we can see it. But
so yeah, if you are in LA, purchase tickets. They are limited, but totally worth it. Go help support nonprofit theater.
Very good. Yeah, we'll put a link to Gates's Vines in the show notes as well, so you can figure out how to get over to those. Okay, Char, let's move on to... We don't have much news today, so it's going to be a shorter news segment than usual. One thing that caught my eye during this very slow week of Star Trek news was yet another StarTrek.com poll. And this one caught my eye because I'm a musician, A, and because this is a topic that I've seen people debating for a while now. And the poll asked which Star Trek series has the best theme music. And 25,000 people voted. And surprisingly to me, the winning series was Star Trek The Next Generation with 30%. Now, most of the time I see people saying that Voyager has the best theme. Voyager got 24% here, coming in second. TNG, 30%. It reminds me, I don't know if it was a year ago, 2 years ago here on the show, we talked about a StarTrek.com poll which asked which series has the best opening sequence. Uh-huh. And this is kind of similar for me. And the thing about the TNG theme is that it's the motion picture theme and they used it on The Next Generation. So it's really not even an original composition for a series.
Wait a minute. Back up. You're saying that Voyager did not win the poll?
Well, that's an earth-shattering moment. Yes, Voyager did. This is actually the second week in a row that Voyager didn't win a StarTrek.com poll. And last week, Voyager came in last. Which engineer would make the best handyman? Belana came in last.
What is happening? Where did the Voyager domination, why did it end? Wow. I mean, because it didn't matter what question you asked on StarTrek.com, Voyager was going to win it hands down.
It was that way for a long time. Wow. It definitely was. But this poll anyway, what do you think about TNG winning? And what are your thoughts? Which series has the best theme, the best music?
Well, I'm really surprised, first off, that TNG won it because, as you said, it's the motion picture theme that TNG just happened to use. But, and maybe I'm a little biased, but I would go with Voyager on this one, and I'm surprised that Voyager didn't win it. I think that the theme has just, it's wonderful. It's a masterpiece. Jerry Goldsmith, he composed it. It's fantastic. And yes, I would also say that it has the best opening sequence too. The two of those things together, you know, visually and musically, you can't beat Voyager. I'm sorry. It's the best. It really is. It's so good. TNG.
Well, let's not forget that he also won an Emmy Award for the Voyager theme.
That's true. So, hey, it's that good. It's award winning. So there. And yet it loses to TNG. Yeah, that doesn't sit well with me. It's not that I dislike the TNG theme, but I don't think it's the best.
So these are my thoughts on it. I think that TNG won because when you think about Star Trek, that composition, that motion picture / TNG theme is, I think for most people these days, that's the first music that you think of. That's like the quintessential Star Trek theme song. And it's kind of like comfort food, right? You know, you have something you love to eat. It reminds you of your childhood, makes you feel all warm inside. I think that for Star Trek fans, the TNG theme is that.
Yeah.
And that's probably why it won with 30%.
Okay, you make a really good point.
It's really hard. As a piece of music, as a composition, it's hard for me to choose which is really the best. Voyager has a great theme. DS9 has a great theme. Surprisingly, I really like, and it took me a while to get to this point, I really like Deep Space Nine's theme from season 4 onward, where they added the weird bass line that doesn't mesh with the melody. And the reason I like it is the fact that it doesn't fit together and it doesn't mesh, because I think that it fits the character of the conflict on that show. And I think Voyager's theme also, in a way, at least it fits the overall vision of that show, which was we're throwing them to unknown space and they're going to be finding all this new stuff every week. And it kind of has that feeling to it of a journey.
Definitely.
So I think it works well for Voyager. Enterprise's theme, I think, is fantastic. I know people hate the song, but if you stop for a minute and you listen to the lyrics and you think about what's being said and you think about what the premise of that show is, it's a really good theme for that show.
Yes, I
definitely like the season 1 and 2 version that's not pepped up. I like that a lot more than the later one. TOS came in last in this poll with 14%. And, you know, I mean, I saw some people make comments like TOS, it's the theme's very 60s, and so it's dated and it doesn't feel right anymore. And I don't really agree with that, but I think it's your generations. You know, for me, when I hear it, I think Star Trek, the Menagerie Suite. I mean, that's Star Trek, but that's because I grew up with TOS. Mm-hmm. So I think that I can see why. I think TNG came in first because it's like the comfort food. I think Voyager came in second because StarTrek.com does seem to have more Voyager fans in its readership than fans of other series. It just feels that way to me. And it also has a great theme that won an Emmy. DS9 has a great theme. It came in third. Enterprise came in fourth, which again surprised me that it beat out TOS by 1% with 15%. And then TOS came in dead last. I feel because the fan base is aging and the people who, like me, grew up with TOS are fewer in number than the people who grew up with TNG and especially Voyager these days.
Maybe so. Although I am a little surprised that Enterprise did not come in dead last. I hate to say it, but I know that there's people out there thinking it because there are people who really, really, really hate that theme with a fiery passion. But it only has 1 percentage point over the original series. So pretty close.
I would have expected Enterprise to get single digits, you know, like 3%, 4%. That's what I would have expected. So I'm surprised by that as well.
You make such a good point, though, that it really does fit that the tone and the theme of the show. It's just, I think it's so different from what we've come to expect out of a Star Trek theme that people just, I don't know. One time I was watching an Enterprise episode and my husband heard the theme for the first time and he said, "What are you watching? Some 80s sitcom?" I'm like, "No, it's Enterprise." Well, so I guess it does seem a little out of place.
It is kind of like an 80s power ballad, right?
Right, right.
So I get it. I get it. And I think we're talking about how all of these themes fit the characters of the shows that they belong to. I think the TNG theme fits the character of that show as well. Mm-hmm. So
it does.
I think they all work really well for each series. So it's hard to put them in order. It largely comes down to musical taste as well. But anyway, that was the poll. So I was curious what you thought about it. If you talk about overall music, though, in the show, the episode we're talking about today in the feature, The Voyager Conspiracy, I was listening to the music in the episode itself and just remembering, you know, that this was a really good time for musical composition on Star Trek. This was, you know, sixth season Voyager. Voyager and DS9 and the TNG films had just some really great, really rich music that was being written that really stands out to me.
You know, I have a confession to make. I kind of have an opposite reaction where I feel like the music blends in so much in this part of Star Trek that I don't notice it. And maybe that's good. Maybe it's doing its job by just blending into the background and guiding me without me even realizing it. But at the same time, I'm not consciously noticing it at all.
Well, I think it's doing its job in that case. Because do this, watch an episode, imagine there's no music going on.
Right.
How would you feel?
I would notice.
And what I'm talking about is not how it's fitting into the episode. I'm talking about the actual musical composition. If you pulled it out of the episode and you just listened to the composition itself.
Right.
It was really nice stuff being written during that time period.
Yeah, I suppose if I listened to it just by itself, I could see just how beautiful it is. It's just, I feel like it doesn't even get my attention. It's just so seamlessly in the background.
Yeah, well, I think that's good. So, okay, well, that's the music poll. Let's go on to the last thing we'll talk about in news today. And this is a book that it's been out since August 15th. Somehow this particular book was off my radar until yesterday. And TrekCore did a review of it. It's a new post on TrekCore. And they did a review of this book by Bruce E. Druschell. And hopefully that's how you pronounce his last name. And it's part of this series called Fan Phenomena. I don't know if you've heard of this. They do books for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Star Wars, Doctor Who, Twin Peaks, Batman, and now they have Star Trek. It's published by Intellect Books, and it's an anthology. It's a collection of essays that have been written, and they are more of an academic or a scholarly look at Star Trek. And there are a number of topics in here. And I thought it would be interesting to get your thoughts on the topics they're talking about in some of these essays. Not so much what they say themselves, because everyone, you can go and get this book and read that. That's what I would recommend, because it's the kind of stuff that you need to actually sit down and read these little essays. But the topics are interesting. And the first one I'm going to talk about is an essay by Druschell called A Utopia Denied, Star Trek and Its Queer Fans. And what he's saying in here is basically that Star Trek has failed the homosexual community and culture in the future by portraying a future in which everyone seems to be heterosexual. And only with a few exceptions like the Outcast on TNG or Rejoined on DS9 do we actually see Star Trek really addressing what it means to have alternative orientations in your sexuality, because it's something that you would expect Star Trek would address because of the principle of Itik and such. I have my own thoughts on it in terms of how Star Trek addressed it or didn't address it, but what do you think? Did Star Trek fail the future? Did it fail viewers in this respect?
I don't know if fail is the correct word, but I think what Bruce Duchel is getting at is that homosexuality is not represented enough in Star Trek. And I absolutely agree with that. I know even in the 1990s, it was very controversial to address homosexuality. A lot of people were still opposed to it. And I know even way back in the 60s, Gene Roddenberry did want to have a gay character on a show, but knew how risky it was going to be, and with a show under such a threat of cancellation, he couldn't go through with it. But this is definitely something that I know has been, I don't know, I think people have been aware, like, yes, this should be addressed. There should be a homosexual character on Star Trek, and it just hasn't happened yet. And I don't know if it was timing, meaning that in the 90s, it just wasn't quite the same. UPN might have been opposed to it. Who knows? And then DS9 ended in 99 in syndication with Enterprise. Maybe it just wasn't in the mix. It wasn't meant to be. I don't know the whole behind the scenes story. Maybe you've got info on that I don't. But I do feel like they could have done more and just maybe chose not to.
Well, I think that what you have to remember is that, and this is the problem I have with someone writing an essay in 2013 about Star Trek and this topic, and approaching it from the way we view things in 2013. There's someone on Twitter who I follow who's watching Star Trek for the first time. And this girl is a feminist, and she's watching The Next Generation. And she's very bothered by the portrayal of Troy and Beverly on The Next Generation. Well, of course you're going to be bothered by it, because the show was written in the late 80s. Right. What you're seeing is you're seeing female characters being written as they would have been at that time. You cannot approach something like that from a 2013 perspective and expect that a show written in the 80s is going to live up to your expectations of how a topic should be handled. And I think that's the case here. I think that Gene Roddenberry would have loved to have had a character to represent homosexuality on the show. It's what the show is about. But in the end, Star Trek is a television show. Star Trek is produced by a studio. The studio has to think about ratings. They have to think about advertisers. They have to think about what's acceptable at the time it's written. At the time that Rejoined on Deep Space Nine aired, I still lived in Alabama. It was even at that time, a female-female kiss on a TV show would get the show taken off the air in Alabama. They would not show it because of something like that. Now, I believe Rejoined was shown, but if you remember the episode of Ellen where she had the kiss, that was not shown in Alabama.
I remember all the controversy about that. That was not that long ago. That was what, 1997?
Yes,
this is
exactly.
When DS9 and Voyager were on the air.
Right, exactly. And so you have to think about all the factors. And so can you say, did Star Trek let the fans down by not addressing this? I mean, you can say that in a way, but you can only fault the TV show and the franchise to a certain point, because the writers don't have complete control over what they can do or what gets to air. I believe that the next Star Trek series probably will have, if not a homosexual lead character, it will be addressed on the show. I would be shocked, actually, if it wasn't.
Absolutely.
So wait for Star Trek to be produced during a time when the world and the society is more open-minded towards this, then you'll get that addressed. But, you know, you can't really hold Star Trek's feet to the fire for something that they did in the late 80s and in the 90s. And there was that rumor. I've never been clear on how close they really came to it. But Dominic Keating says that when they were launching Enterprise, he actually got a call from a gay lesbian magazine to do a lead story, hearing that Malcolm Reed was going to be a gay character. And the way I've heard the story now is that it was kind of a joke that Brandon Braga, I believe it was playing on Dominic. But I don't know. You know, I kind of have a feeling that they probably did want to have that on Enterprise, and maybe they ran into some opposition.
Huh.
And we don't really know the details, but maybe, you know, people were still a little bit shy about going in that direction with Star Trek. I fully believe that at all points in Star Trek, the writers would have been happy to address that if it were within their power. So
It's very possible, you know, the executives at UPN said no.
Well, again, you know, advertisers, audience ratings, you have to take it all into consideration. So the next topic in the book is the Borg fan pariah or cultural pillar. And this is an essay by Charles Evans Jones Jr., who is discussing what the Borg may mean for our future. And
meaning, you know, we become
I feel like, well, I think, you know, I just got the book last night when I found out about it. I need to read this essay. The general argument about this, and an argument, I don't mean dispute, I mean position, is that the Borg represent us in the future, you know, that we are already starting to put prosthetics into our bodies. We are, I mean, I really believe in the coming decades that we're going to have microchips implanted in us with sensors, you know, that, you know, Google Glass is a transitional point, I think, for us. And that's where we're headed. I mean, we are going to merge our organic bodies with cybernetics. It's going to happen. So how do we balance that? How do we avoid going down the path that the Borg went down? And do you see that as our future as well?
It's certainly a possibility. Yeah, I do think we are getting to a point where technology and organic life forms are going to collide. And I know that there's a lot of fear about that. A lot of people think we are going to become, you know, the Terminator or or the Borg or some sort of evil, unstoppable force. And I don't know, have we just been brainwashed by movies?
I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. I think we think about it a lot more because it has become a commonplace thing for us because of entertainment, you know, the idea. But we also see the technology. So it's kind of hard to deny that we're not headed down that path.
Right.
Both in terms of our everyday technology, like our smartphones or Google Glass or such, but also, you know, artificial organs. We can now print. We can use 3D printers to print organs.
Yes.
And
it's amazing.
Imagine what that technology is going to be like 100 years from now.
Right. So yeah, and what are we going to... Wow.
It's a good question. You know, are we headed there? And I think that it's a very big question of how we're going to balance that, how we're going to make these things work for us without losing our identity. Because we've seen in Star Trek places where, you know, you have... you download yourself into a computer, for example. Make an android. Live inside an android's body. So we'll see what happens with that. The other side of this piece is how a lot of fans see the Borg as not being the black and white villain, but having a more nuanced presence in Star Trek. And I think that's probably what we're talking about right here, the fact that the Borg represent a possible path for us in the future, but not necessarily the one that will go down. And in TNG, they were kind of black and white. They were these space zombies coming at us. Yeah. And then in Voyager, they became like people you can negotiate with. And
right.
You can have a cup of coffee with the Borg Queen. And yeah, you can use our transwarp conduits. That's no problem. If you'll help us get rid of these weird-looking three-legged guys from another dimension. That was kind of strange. So the Borg are like a big topic of contention, and that's what Charles Evans Jones Jr. is doing here in his essay. So it'll be an interesting read. I'm looking forward to reading it now that I have the book on my Kindle. And one more from the book that we'll talk about, Char, is called Lost in Orbit: Satellite Star Trek Fans. And this is an essay by Bianca Spriggs talking about casual fans. I mean, we are clearly not casual fans. We spend hours every week talking about Star Trek on our shows. But, you know, you meet a lot of people who are casual fans who don't know all the lines of dialogue from episodes the way we do, can't get upset about continuity errors because they don't really know that they're happening because they're not that much into the show to start with. And this kind of pairs up with another thing called by Catherine Coker, which is an essay called Not Your Daddy's Star Trek, Rebooting a Franchise and Rewriting a Fandom. And that one's about what the J.J. Abrams reboot has done to the fan base itself. And I think these two are kind of related, because I think that one thing that the reboot is doing is that it is giving us a new generation of casual Star Trek fans. What have you experienced in talking to people? You know, have you met people who got into Star Trek because of the J.J. movies? Have you met people who have watched Star Trek over the years because it happened to be on TV, but they're not, you know, the diehard fans like we are? What do people tell you about Star Trek?
You know what's strange is in my circle of friends, I know more people who are very into Star Trek as opposed to just casual fans. But I do know a couple, and I do know somebody who got into Star Trek as a result of the first J.J. Abrams movie. She saw that and just fell in love with it and thought it was fantastic, and then discovered on Netflix a little bit later all the other stuff and went back and is now a full-fledged Star Trek fan. This is what I think is the most interesting essay topic you could find, at least from a diehard fan's perspective, because I want to know what a casual fan gets out of Star Trek. What do they like? What sort of themes do they attach to? Which characters are their favorites? Do they know what a barrel roll is?
Maybe they do if they played Star Fox.
Yeah, and they're going to probably think, yeah, barrel roll didn't come from Star Trek. That's from Star Fox, you fools.
That's right.
But we know different. Geordi got that party started.
We own it now.
Yeah, we do. So I'm curious as to whether or not this essay goes into that sort of a thing about what casual fans get out of Star Trek and what they enjoy about it.
Yeah, it's a good question, because I think, and this is what I tell people who don't like the Abrams verse, who don't like the JJ movies, you know, I'm kind of lukewarm on the movies. I don't hate them. I don't love them. I'm not going to sit down and watch them over and over and over like I do Star Trek 2 and 3 and 4. I'm not going to record the audio from the movies onto cassette tape so I can play them in my car like I did with Star Trek 2 and 3 and 4.
You have a cassette tape in your car?
No, this was back in the day.
I used to I know, have them. I'm teasing.
Yeah. So, but what I tell people is that it is important for Star Trek because the fan base, there's no new Star Trek on television. So people aren't going to just discover Star Trek because it happens to be on Thursday night.
Right.
People
it's very important.
People aren't even going to discover it just because it's on Netflix. Because have you ever gone into Netflix? Just trying to find the show you know you want to watch is not always easy. So it's not like you're going to go log in and there's going to be this giant screen that says, hey, here are all the Star Trek shows. Watch them and memorize all the facts. So...
to which the casual fan is going to say F you.
Right.
You know, the completely unknowing casual fan, that is. Yeah, the J.J. Abrams verse has totally been a portal for an entirely new generation of fans to discover Star Trek, and it was absolutely needed. Love or hate the new movies, they've served a very important purpose.
Right. And yes, and it was needed, and it gets more people in. So, but the next question is, what do those people do after they get in? So many of them go and they watch Star Trek on Netflix. However, I often wonder if they decided to watch Star Trek because they loved the 2009 movie or they loved Into Darkness, what are their expectations when they go and watch the series? And are they going to like what they see? Are they thinking that Star Trek is a lot of action? Are they going to like the moral stories and the talky episodes? And are they going to enjoy this when they watch it? So it's very interesting to me to find out how these new casual Star Trek fans feel about Star Trek, what they're expecting to get out of the show, and what that means for the future of the franchise. Will the next series give us what we want from Star Trek? Or will it give more of what maybe these new fans want from Star Trek, which is a little more action, a little bit less of the deep philosophical explorations that we're accustomed to?
Those are all really good questions, Chris. And I think the best way to find out is to probably get this book, read this essay, and see what this author found out. Yeah. I might just download this book for that very reason. I did not know about this book either until TrekCore released the review. It's definitely not, I would say, a mass print thing. You're not probably not going to find it in a Barnes & Noble or anything like that, are you?
I don't know. That's the thing is, I think that it was kind of off the radar of the mainstream Star Trek printed books and reference books and this area, because as you know, Matthew and I do literary treks every week and we talk about Star Trek books exclusively on that show. And this was not on our radar. And so I'm really glad TrekCore reviewed it, because I went right afterwards and got the book because I want to read it. I love this kind of book. I think when you look at the other franchises that they've covered, which I listed at the beginning, I think it's more of like a mainstream entertainment title than the usual Star Trek thing, and maybe that's why we didn't know about it. But it is available on Kindle. It is available on iBooks. I assume it's available on Nook. I didn't check Nook because I don't have a Nook, but I would expect it's there as well, especially if it's on iBooks. And it's available in print, of course. So go check it out. I'm looking forward to reading it. I've got it queued up right here myself. And these are just really great questions.
They are.
I think that's fascinating. All Star Trek fans can enjoy talking about. Okay, Char, that's all we have in news today. But before we move on to our feature about the Voyager conspiracy, and of course, we're going to be joined by our friends from Earl Grey. That might sound a little bit weird for a Voyager episode, but trust me, you're going to enjoy it. Philip and Daniel will be with us. But before then, let's tell everyone about our sponsor for this week's show, Squarespace. Now, everyone who listens to this show knows that I love Squarespace, and I'm not just saying that because they're a sponsor. I use Squarespace for my work. Trek FM's built on it. It is a fantastic platform, an all-in-one platform that gives you your web hosting as well as your content management system, and not the kind of CMS that you're accustomed to from something like WordPress. It's a really elegant, really easy to use, very reliable CMS that doesn't require you to download lots of plugins and, you know, update them and manage them. It just gives you exceptional tools to build your website, your blog, your online portfolio, your online store. It is a great platform, and it's incredibly easy to use. They're constantly improving it by adding new features, and they have absolutely the best support you're going to find, not only for, you know, online hosts, but really in the business world itself. They are fantastic. And it all starts at just $8 a month. But, you know, there are really, Char, three things that I like to point out that are the key features that make me love Squarespace so much. And I know you use Squarespace as well, so you know what these features are too. What are the three features that stand out?
Well, first and foremost, design. Nothing is more important these days than a clean layout, and Squarespace gives you exactly that. I mean, all of their templates are really clean. They allow your content to be the focus of your website. And you mentioned plugins and all that jazz, like through WordPress and stuff. You do not have to worry about that sort of a thing on Squarespace, saving you time, a lot of energy, a lot of hassle. And you're gonna have a beautiful website in a matter of minutes. You just put your content up there and you can go. That's pretty amazing.
And it's going to look beautiful because, as you said, the design is great. You can use the templates right out of the box. They're going to look fantastic, but it's very easy to customize them as well.
The other important thing, too, after you have that content, you want to publicize it. So you're going to get on social media. You're going to tell everybody on Twitter and Facebook, LinkedIn, wherever. Squarespace allows you to connect to any kind of social media service and pump out your content so that people know that it's there.
Absolutely. It's very, very important. And you don't want to spend a lot of time doing it because it's very time consuming if you have to do it all by hand.
Right.
And so these connected accounts that just push your content, there's like a little toggle in there. So Twitter, for example, you drop in your Twitter ID into the settings for your site, and there's just a little toggle on off switch for your Twitter account. If you toggle it to on, you can, anything you post, you can tell it, just tweet this out for me when I hit publish, and it's done.
Yeah, and that's really handy. If you ever go with all those social media services one at a time to publish a link or something like that, time yourself as to how long it takes you to actually get all that content out, as opposed to what you could do clicking a button on Squarespace, save yourself minutes, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, your other option besides using Squarespace for this would be, you know, to build yourself a special alcove, climb in, and, you know, just use that to broadcast, you know, like 30 million teraquads of data out to social networks. Trust me, it's a lot easier to just use Squarespace for this.
Yeah, you could do that, but there's also a lot of issues with that, as you're going to find out in our discussion in the feature. It's not exactly the easiest
place. Photonic fleas.
Well, that's a start, yeah. That's just one of many issues. There are no photonic fleas in Squarespace. I'm pretty sure they can guarantee
it. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
That's in the tagline, I think, isn't it?
It should be if it's not.
So, in addition to the design and the connected accounts, there's responsive design, which lets you build the website once. It looks fantastic on a desktop, on a tablet, on a smartphone. Even if you rotate those devices, it just reflows itself. So your site is going to have an appropriate layout for whatever screen size and format it's on. And that's a huge time saver. And another great thing is the commerce feature, which allows you to set up your own online store. So you can sell both physical goods or digital goods. You can handle shipping through there, tax calculations. It operates through Stripe, which allows you to process credit cards right from your Squarespace website. It's a fantastic system, really the easiest way you're going to find anywhere to set up an online store. And as you know from listening to The Ready Room each week, I think Daniel, Michael Fisher, a lot of guys, they've got some really creative ideas for Star Trek stores that they want to set up with Squarespace. So you can do that yourself as well. But Shar, you know, the easiest way for everyone to find out how good Squarespace is just go try it for yourself. Mm-hmm. You can get a 14-day free trial. There's no credit card required. You just enter your name and your email address, and in a matter of minutes, you'll be building your website. And if you already use a platform like WordPress, which we've talked about a little bit today, you can import that site into Squarespace, and then you can start using all of the great Squarespace tools to make adjustments to your layout. You can see how the power of Squarespace can help you do things that you really just can't do on a platform like WordPress. So try it for yourself. Go to squarespace.com and use offer code TREK9 to save 10% as a Trek FM listener. And if you sign up for the annual plan, you can also get a free custom domain registration as well. So, you know, you can get photonicfleas.com.
Oh, sorry. No, I just bought it. It's taken.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that one. Shar, cover your ears for just a second, everyone.
Okay.
Go register sevensfancyalcove.com right now. It's going to be a great name for a store. And since Shar wasn't listening, she didn't register it. So act now and you can get it. You can get that free choose the annual plan. So again, support us and support Squarespace. They make it possible for us to bring the Ready Room to you every week. Go to squarespace.com, use offer code TREK9 to save 10%, and we really, really thank them for their support of Trek FM and the Ready Room. Alcoves have many uses. There's the obvious one, regeneration, but there are less common ones as well, like playing Matlock. And when Seven decided she could analyze data better than the crew or the ship's computers, she found herself being pulled down a rabbit hole infested with photonic fleas. And today we're going to talk about this little journey into the imagination. And to help us do that, we're joined by Trek FM feature writer and co-host of Earl Grey, Philip Gilfus, who apparently, according to his screen name today, suspects everyone. Is that true, Philip?
It's very true, Chris. And I am armed with my phaser, since that's the new standard wear today for tonight's podcast.
I saw that. I was going to ask you, are phasers now standard issue on the Ready Room?
I was going to ask, is this going to be more of an X-Files-esque discussion where you trust no one?
That's right. That's right. I don't.
If you
see
trust no one,
smoking.
You suspect everyone.
That's right. The truth is.
Well, you can't trust anyone. And I tell you, the person I trust the least is Commander Seska.
Yeah. I'm glad you noticed that, because that really irked me.
Well, she got a field promotion after she betrayed the crew of Voyager, so.
Apparently, yeah.
What was the promotion for? Like, impregnating herself with Chakotay's DNA? Giving him a chance at fatherhood? What?
I guess.
I think that was it. That's what the records say.
You're the Voyager expert. We're the TNG guys.
Yeah, that's true. We've got Earl Grey commenting on Voyager. This is fantastic.
It's very meta.
That's right. And as you can hear, everyone, we're also joined by another co-host of Earl Grey and friend of Commander Flipper, Daniel Prue. Hey, Daniel.
That's right.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You know what, though? Voyager doesn't have a cetacean ops, does it?
Not that I'm aware
of. I don't think so.
I think we're flipperless.
That's too bad. It's too bad. I bet you would have got home at least two seasons sooner if you had a
That was the host. Problem, right? But the ship is so much smaller, there just wasn't room for it. They were only supposed to be gone for 3 weeks.
Maybe you could have like a mini cetacean ops with guppies or some sort of smaller minnow fish.
They needed Picard's fish tank, is what you're saying.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
That's what people don't know about the Enterprise D, is that Livingston was actually the head of cetacean ops, and he controlled everything from Picard's Ready Room.
That's right. He was a Section 31 member. Yes. He was.
Yes, that's right.
Keeping an eye on things on the D, so.
Indeed. All right. So, you know, it's a good thing there was no cetacean ops on Voyager, though, because Neelix would have been swimming in the tank all the time because of all that water.
God,
he wouldn't be able to resist.
He would have been bathing in there.
He would. And B, Neelix would have tried to cook the guppies.
That's true.
Well, you know, yeah, if supplies would have gotten a little too low, you do what you got to do, right?
I wonder if they would go well with Leola Root. I don't know.
Probably.
No, I'm glad we never found out.
What if they had some catfish in the Voyager Citation Ops, and then maybe Neelix could have made some pan-fried catfish?
Now I think we're crossing over too much.
Yeah.
Fanfic writers take
note. Okay, well, let's jump into the discussion of this episode, The Voyager Conspiracy, which is a very interesting episode. And before we get into the meat of it, of course, which is Seven thinking she's still a drone and can therefore analyze 30 million teraquads of data while she sleeps, which puts those learn a foreign language while you sleep programs to shame.
I think that's what Tom Paris was doing.
Yeah.
You know how he that's mentioned what he how said, he right? tried he to said learn he tried while it. He slept, and he said it gave him a really big headache.
His one line of the episode.
Yeah, his one
Except
line.
He was not learning a language. He was taking that subliminal car repair program where you learn how to repair automobiles from the 20th century while you sleep.
Oh,
so if you ever encounter one floating in space, you'll know what to do.
Oh, I thought he was learning like Klingon so that he could learn, you know, sexy and dirty phrases to say to B'Elanna.
Or maybe he was like learning the Haynes manuals of like the 1930s pickup trucks, you know, just so he knew how to fix them.
Well, he's a couple seasons too late, but I suppose... You know.
That's what you mean. Okay, you said the Haynes manuals, and I was thinking about what we were just discussing on the other
side. The other side of the room.
Where Neelix handles everyone's underwear when he does laundry, which of course was discussed on
Tom's
The Journey.
Haynes. Oh dear.
And like the Haynes manuals, what, this is Neelix trying to figure out how to do the laundry?
You know, he learns as he goes.
Neelix probably knows a lot of ship's gossip if he does everyone's underwear. I'm not going to say anything more, but...
Ooh.
Oh, he does know gossip, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think we hear you loud and clear, buddy.
That's okay, well, I think we better move on from this topic before we go down our own rabbit hole. This episode opens up, it was very interesting. Well, it opens up, of course, with Seven and Naomi, but we get to that scene with Kathy and Coco, and they're having a candlelight dinner.
Yes.
Talking about everyone on the ship having babies.
Yes.
Now, and the first thing that popped in my mind were all of these videos on YouTube where people have cut together scenes of Janeway and Chakotay to make it look like they had a relationship on the show. Boy, you talk about throwing, you know, just a slow fastball, if you will, at the audience here. My goodness, boy. What is that, like a 50-mile-per-hour fastball?
Oh, man. Yeah.
It was just too easy.
Well, you're the DS9er. It really is. You'd be able to tell us.
That's right. Well, I play for the Vulcan team, and therefore I'm not very good. And actually, I learned how to play outfield from Rom. Oh. That didn't go very well.
Learning from the best, huh?
I have to say, when I saw that scene, I could just think of Char. I don't know if this would be now or maybe 5 years ago, you know, going to the keyboard for her new JC fan fiction. So I was definitely thinking about you for that scene. I actually wrote J/C just for you.
Awesome. Yes, you are unfortunately right. Although at this point, this is season 6, I had basically given up. But they still keep throwing just these small little snippets that, if you're still looking for false sense of hope at this point, they're there. But I have in my notes, just friends don't have candlelight dinners with champagne together, okay?
And music.
That's all I'm going to say about it. And the romantic music, and she's out of her uniform a little bit. Come on!
Oh, yeah.
They were making out.
Well, don't you guys, especially since we have you guys from Earl Grey on here today, don't you guys remember all those candlelight dinners that Picard and Riker had together so they could discuss ship operations?
Right, every Sunday, right?
That's when right. Riker was like, tell me about that, Picard, and then the music would start.
And Picard was like, I slaved over a replicator for an hour for you.
Yeah.
And then they just realized they just wanted croissants, just, you know, coffee and croissants was all they had after that.
Right. And then Riker puts his leg up on the table and tells Picard a story.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what all captains and first officers do, right? Yeah.
Apparently so.
And then Enterprise.
Apparently. No, I'm calling bullshit.
Enterprise had the three-way. So, you know, that I think every series did it.
Ooh, yeah. Kinky. So this is what you're talking about on Earl Grey.
Oh.
Can't wait for next week.
It gets interesting.
Well, as I tweeted, we do have our After Hours 50 Shades of Earl Grey podcast as well.
Yes, so. That's true.
Yes, I saw that. So this whole scene just, oh, it's like, where did this come from?
Such they do great
this?
Fodder.
This is a thing. They do this regularly. So it was interesting. Although I will say one good thing from this scene, however, is that it was a moment where the writers brought up a topic that we have discussed on the Ready Room before is something that should have been brought up regularly on Voyager, which is the fact that Voyager needed to be a generational ship. They should have been thinking in terms of that all along, because who knows if you're going to run into a graviton catapult or if you're going to be able to give stories to somebody so they can help you jump closer to home. You would think that from the very beginning, Janeway would have been thinking about the fact that, well, the crew's going to have to start having babies.
Yeah.
But no, the doctor has to run some projections and then rumors start flying. But it was at least they brought up the topic here for a moment.
Right. And I would even argue that they should have been having babies at this point.
Is this more, get it out. Is this more Janeway Chakotay? Is this where I get the whole podcast from you?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you think if you have 150 people in relatively closed quarters for 6 years, yeah, at this point, there are probably going to be quite a few little children running around.
You would think that people would be sleeping over at a special friend's house at least every now and then. Well, not their house, their quarters. You know what I meant.
And we only got two during the whole series. And one of them was already, you know, in embryonic stage when the mission started.
Right. So does that even completely count? I don't know. I mean, poor Samantha Wildman was pregnant for almost two seasons. Yeah, there should have been a lot more babies on Voyager.
Why don't we ever see anyone, you know, coming out of a turbo lift or coming down the corridor with their hair all messed up? And then someone gets on the, they get on the turbo lift, like Tom and Harry get on. And then Harry says, did she change her hair?
It's still Starfleet regulation. I think the reason why is because they nipped this in the bud really early on in Elogium, where Chakotay walks in on a couple kissing in the turbo lift. And it kind of you know, that spawns a conversation with Chakotay or with Janeway. And they probably sent out the memo like, hey, guys, be a little more discreet, would you? And then, of course, then we don't see anything. I mean, they didn't have to be that discreet. Jeez. You'd think as the years went
on,
they would
loosen up. Tom and Bilana have to run around behind the scenes for a long time.
I guess they had to sneak around.
Yeah, but then they got yelled at.
Well, yeah, you can't win then, right?
Yeah, you really can't, I guess. You have to go to the holodeck.
You can't have a cake and eat it too. Well, there's always the holodeck.
Well, that's just Tuvok.
Yeah.
Well, no, the Janeway had her holographic boyfriend, and apparently, as we learned in those episodes, Chakotay doesn't stop him either, that they're not real.
That's true.
Well, one thing one thing I was going to say about this opening scene, though, not opening scene, but with Chakotay and Janeway, I mean, for those of you watching this episode, this is definitely your drink of choice drinking game for how many times Kathy has coffee in this episode. Because I think it is literally, it is 90% of every scene. And I don't know about you, but romantic dinner, I usually don't have coffee, but that's just me.
Well, it's Janeway.
I feel like at some point, she's on the bridge or she's walking around. She's got the coffee cup. She's drinking. She's doing this. You feel like it's going to snowball by the end of the episode. She's going to have that hat with the two cup holders that you wear to the football game with the tubes coming down so she can just drink coffee and have both hands free to work the controls.
No, she really should have.
Her coffee mug is a futuristic mini replicator, so it's always full of coffee.
She could have used that, yeah.
Not only that, but it operates on a different power grid from the rest of the replication systems.
Of course.
Therefore, she can have unlimited coffee, just like they can use the holodeck as much as they
want. That's right. Yeah, this is Voyager.
I think every Starfleet captain is allowed one luxury item. It's like Survivor. So Picard got his fish, Sisko got his baseball, and Janeway got her self-replicating coffee mug.
Oh, and Archer had Porthos.
There you go.
See? You're absolutely right. Good observation. Yeah.
And Tuvok apparently had an entire cargo ship full of candles as his luxury item.
Yeah.
We can't have open flames on a spaceship. There's not that much oxygen.
All right. Well, let's get into the next bit of the story here, which is the meat of the story. And this is the House of Cards.
Now on Netflix.
Sevens. Crazy theories. Yes, that's right. It's on Netflix. And, you know, it started off well in that she discovered the photonic fleas, and then it snowballs from there. Now, the whole bit about the photonic fleas and how it all happened, I don't know if Do you guys think that somehow she actually unraveled exactly what really happened? Or she's just giving her idea of what probably happened, and they're showing us the scenes as they go, but it's really more her imagination, which is leading us into the fact that she can construct these very, very elaborate step-by-step events that help her build the conspiracy theories as she goes along.
Well, it's big numbers. It's data mining. It's what she's doing. And if we don't get that first success, we don't take anything she says later on seriously. And not that, I mean, we really think right. Janeway is doing this super secret mission or Chakotay is part of the Maquis still, but you have to set up some sort of success early on in order to facilitate the story down the road.
You do. But I honestly think that she constructed this out of just kind of pure dumb luck. This was, considering the amount of data she had at this point, fairly easy for her to figure out. She wasn't overloaded at this point, so she was able to piece the puzzles together. Simple little mystery. It's cute. And you're right, it does give her credibility. So, I mean, if she would have failed on something like this, we would have laughed at her the whole way through. But no, we do have to start right. off with she could maybe be right.
Yeah, then there's the part where she walked away and then she said, wait a minute, I have one more question. And then she solved everything. So.
Daniel, you mentioned that it's big numbers. And in my introduction, I said there are other uses for alcoves besides regeneration. And of course, playing Matlock is one. I just realized as you were saying that a Borg alcove would be the ultimate Bitcoin generator.
That's true. That's really true.
So the success here was great, but then it starts to go astray and she gets into... She's asking the computer for information, right, about the caretaker, and the computer is telling her insufficient information, insufficient data. So then you keep drilling down to try to ask the right questions to make you believe what you're hearing. Then you see this fuzzy little thing that looks kind of like a tractor beam, and then she gets her third ship theory going, and then the initial one is... interested. Did you guys also think that for a moment, maybe you didn't believe that Janeway was actually on some sort of secret mission, but did you think for a moment when Seven is laying out this whole conspiracy to Chakotay that, wow, it would be really cool if this really was true and this is what the show really was? that would be cool. It'd be an interesting twist and it would be a very different...
You know,
really throw you a curveball.
I never thought about that.
We're full of baseball analogies today.
That's a what if episode for To the Journey.
That's true. It is. I'll put that on our list. Thanks. It sort of takes like the idea of worst case scenario, but puts it on steroids.
Because worst case scenario, you know, well, this is just a hollow novel that Tuvok
right.
made. A what if. But here it's like, you know, maybe.
Yeah. What if it was real?
Because you have to admit that this guy here, Tash, is suspicious, right? Like this one guy is thrown to some unknown region of space, and by himself, he's going to build this elaborate catapult system that can throw his ship 1,000 light years through space using some rare technology that, as far as we know, only existed on the Caretaker Array. It is very suspicious. Like, as silly as that guy is in the episode,
yes,
he was used rather effectively, I thought, to at least make you feel like something suspicious could possibly be going on, just because his story didn't add up. Whether it's the odd makeup or it's his personality, I like the way he slides the coffee cup across. Do you go on to a ship you've never been on before, you just met these people, and you're like, here's what I'm going to do. Oh, thanks for the coffee, by the way. I'm going to slide my ship across space, and then thankfully someone catches the cup before it flies off the conference table.
He's just a little too happy, is what I think
wasn't he?
Lends the credo to this. I mean, anybody who's just a little too happy, especially under circumstances like trying to get home and you're a long way from home, it does make you suspicious. It really does.
Well, I don't want to speak for Daniel, but I think everyone's attitude reflects your series. You know, Chris, of course, being a Niner, suspicious of everyone, right? He has the Garrick talking. you know, Char, you know, been in the Delta Quadrant, not making a lot of friends, very distrustful. Dan and I were like, I'm sure he's fine. It's great that he's here. He's betcha he's here to help.
That's true, because in the Alpha Quadrant, that's what Captain Picard more often than not gets.
It's true. And so the problem with this guy being suspicious, I get that too. It is a little weird why he's there. But when Seven's going through her theory and she's like, where did this guy come from? I'm immediately thinking he could not have ever been involved because they're 6 years away from where the caretaker array was. How could he have possibly caught up to them in that time? I mean, even if that thing was functional part of the time, which it obviously wasn't because it was broken. But then you could say, well, it was broken on purpose. So
convenient.
But it just seems like that's an insane amount of distance to make up for that guy to catch up. So,
yeah, I mean, it's a very elaborate.
You're forgetting. You weren't paying attention, Daniel. Stardate 51899.3. Tosh rendezvous with a Kazon vessel carrying a Tetrion power cell stolen from the exploding caretaker array. Stardate 52176.3. Tosh negotiates the use of Borg transwarp conduits so that he can arrive at this location to rendezvous with Chakotay. Weren't you paying attention?
Oh my gosh.
You know, Chris, you've been doing a lot of Trek FM podcasts, and we're beginning to worry about you. I know you sort of connected the server directly into you, but maybe it's time to just kind of take a little
time. I think it's
time
for an intervention, guys.
Yeah. So Chris has his own alcove then, like a Trek FM alcove where he just plugs in at night.
He does, yes. Right.
He absorbs every podcast that's going on the network.
That's pretty much it, yes.
That is what I do. So, but like I said, his story doesn't add up, but just the fact that it doesn't add up does make you a little bit suspicious. Like, well, there's something going on. It's like, surely it's not. I can't possibly believe that Janeway is there on some sort of secret mission, but this guy's weird.
It is odd.
And Janeway's like, oh, sure, we'll help you do this. We don't want anything in return. And after you use it, if you don't die, then we'll go through it also.
She's just really altruistic. It's the Starfleet way. It's the 24th century, guys.
that was my note of like, you know, it's like, oh man, I wish I could repay you. Everyone's like, don't say it, don't say it. Yes, I wish you could repay us. Maybe I could take you home. Okay, yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great.
Right. So which of Seven's theories do you guys like more or find more compelling? Do you enjoy the Janeway theory or the Chakotay theory? I'm a Janeway theory guy myself.
Actually, so. I think it's the theory of Naomi Wildman working for one side or the other.
Who are you working for?
I'm
only
that.
Six. Yeah,
it's how convenient.
I know. Yeah.
Well, I think that was kind of my challenge with this episode is that, you know, you have these kind of, you know, the weird theories, and we'll go into, you know, Chakotay and Janeway and all that stuff, but like they didn't actually answer the stuff they put out there. Where did this tractor beam come from? Why did Tuvok use all these, you know, huge charges? They just left it out there. Wasn't what Seven
figured,
was saying.
I thought that was just Seven coming to a lot of conclusions based on circumstantial evidence that, like, she managed to put the puzzle together, but it wasn't the same result that you see on the box. You know, I feel like that's what a lot of conspiracy theorists do. They cherry pick whatever evidence they want to piece together and make it seem plausible enough to where maybe there is some truth in it, but it's incomplete.
But it's,
it doesn't take in all the facts.
It's true. Philip is right, because especially in that the one question when Seven's talking to Chakotay and she's like, are these charges, you know, Starfleet standard issue? He's like, no. And she's like, where did they come from? I don't know. And then that's it. Like, so you would think by now he should know where that this heavy like artillery came from, and he has no idea. So there are questions left unanswered.
And my favorite part is when she does stumble upon the truth when they're talking about the caretaker incident, and she's like, oh, really? Your vessel was taken over, or was getting plummeted by one Kazon vessel, and we're all like, "Wait a minute!" And then Tom's
armed
like,
to the
"It
teeth.
Was heavily armed." We're all like, oh. Seven, we're with you." That didn't make sense to us either.
So, am I gathering that you hate the Kazon as well?
Who doesn't? That's a poll that StarTrek.com needs to do, and it could be an all Voyager poll. So therefore,
so Voyager would win it. Yeah.
Voyager would win. Well, of course. Do you love the Kazon? And I'm curious how many people will say that they love the Kazon, because I don't even think any Voyager fans like the Kazon. I can't think of anyone I've ever talked to that said, yeah, I really like the Kazon. They were really cool.
I like that they're red. I'm just trying to throw some positive.
Well, you have to say which Kazon set. You know, maybe you like the Oogla, but you don't like the, you know, you gotta have to be specific.
Yeah. No.
So, with the theories, let's not forget the third theory that Starfleet sent Seven's parents to investigate the Borg so that she could be assimilated, so when she grows up, Janeway could come and get her and bring her back so they could dissect her.
Right.
Which all led up to the theory that Janeway has at the very end, that that was all in place just for them to have a bonding moment.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, one thing I really missed about this episode, did we see the alcove where she had, you know, where she was picking up the chalk a la A Beautiful Mind with all the, you know, links she was making to everything?
We did not get to see that, unfortunately, because I guess she just didn't decorate her alcove. As Naomi was saying to her, you know, decorating is irrelevant.
Though I did love the very odd Naomi quote in the beginning. Can I watch? I'm like, you got a creepy child here. And
take that man. Out of context and pervert that line. Yeah.
Well, she's been studying the Starfleet database and she learned all about Argyle and his time on the Enterprise and, you know, she's kind of modeling some of her behavior after that.
So Naomi is the creeper hanging out in the Jeffrey tubes because she has no supervision, hardly at all. So all day, while she's supposed to be taking lessons and stuff, she's in the Jeffrey's tube concocting, I'm going to guess, vodka on Voyager. Because Argyle's got the gin market. And then she comes back to her quarters just in time for Neelix to tuck her in.
You think Naomi Wildman is distilling vodka?
Sure, why not?
She's got to do something. She doesn't have any friends her age, obviously.
Maybe she's...
I mean, yeah, what's the poor girl going to do?
Maybe she's running hydroponics now that Kes is gone, and that's where the still is.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's like aeroponics / winery / distillery. She's got a whole bunch of underground operations going on.
So later on in Voyager, when the Borg children come on, does she put them to work?
Yeah, they're her slave labor. Yeah, you bet.
It's a little child gang.
Child workforce.
Naomi's the captain of the gang.
Yeah, Icheb is her assistant. Assistant to the captain's assistant.
That's she takes to the captain's assistant.
No, assistant captain. That's what I was told.
Yeah, definitely that. Speaking of Kes, what did you guys think about when Neelix was recollecting his days with Kes? I think it was very sweet how he was reminiscing about her. Even though the relationship kind of creeped me out, I still thought it was cute and nice.
Yeah, you see, the issue is that he was reminiscing about the beginning of their relationship, which kind of makes me
forgetting.
Which makes me think that she was probably in diapers at the time, so it's a really, really weird situation.
I didn't really think about that, but that is a good point. Because Neelix says that he had been hanging around in the area of the caretaker for about a year before Voyager came, right?
So she had just
So that would mean that Kes would have just been born around that time, right?
Yeah. Creepy.
Wow, Neelix. Wow. I'm never going to look at Neelix the same way again after this show.
Who's looking over after Naomi? Neelix. That's why she gets the creepsters from.
Neelix She's just modeling Neelix.
Yeah.
The poor kid.
What kind of stories is he telling her at night?
Right? Samantha Wildman really needs to be supervising her child.
And not letting her go into the holodeck with him on some fairy tale adventure.
No kidding.
You know, that's the thing about Voyager with Kes, that so the actors themselves, Ethan Phillips and Jennifer Leon themselves, were fine together.
Sure.
But if you think about the concept, you've got this alien who is supposed to be, I don't know, middle-aged. And then you've got this character who lives 9 years, who is 1 year old when you find her. And here you're telling the story about their relationship a year earlier than that. These are the kind of little moments where you wish that the writers would stop for a minute and think about what they had set up.
Yeah.
Well, is it like dog years or the Compens? Like, how old is Compens?
Yes. That's the thing, though, and that's what I'm thinking, that you can, if you stop and think later on, when once they're on the ship together, you can think, okay, well, technically she's 2 or technically she's 3.
Well, she's adult in our eyes.
But for her, she's more like 20 or 30.
Yeah.
But if she's, in this scenario, she's still like 5 or 6, right?
Now, why didn't 7 uncover this?
Well, let's bring this back around to the actual theories themselves. And to go back, Daniel, to your question, I don't know if any of them are actually compelling, but no. I think that the...
Not anymore.
The theory about Janeway being on a secret Starfleet mission is interesting. The theory about Starfleet sending her parents to investigate the board so they can retrieve her when she's an adult and dissect her is ridiculous, which of course we're supposed to believe is ridiculous at that point because that's where she's completely lost her mind. And the theory about Chakotay and the Maquis is also ridiculous because how would the Maquis don't have the resources to pull something like this off in the first place. But what I did find interesting about that theory is that for a moment, the Voyager writers remembered that they had this thing on the show called the Maquis, and that there was supposed to be this conflict between Starfleet and the Maquis people. And, you know, maybe Chakotay was on some kind of mission and Tuvok was in on it and all this. And it was sort of interesting, but I love Janeway's response to 7, which is that, you know, I might listen to you if I didn't know Chakotay so well. And it's, I was kind of disappointed in how quickly Chakotay bought into the whole Janeway theory. And I was happy to see Janeway be sensible and say, okay, yeah, I can see where you connected all those dots, but come on, 7.
I thought both of them, and I know Char's the expert here with Voyager, but I thought both Janeway and Chuckles, is it? I think both of them.
Coco.
It went a little Coco. Too easily with it. I think that's sort of the conceit of the episode, because obviously you can't get to the conflict.
Yes.
But I do think.
No, I totally agree with you.
But I think my favorite reaction from Janeway, I mean, because it's such a trope. But with Janeway, the way she delivers it just cracks me up, where when 7 tells her, Janeway's like, did Chakotay put this up to you? You know,
which I love just, that line,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that was funny.
Like, that would be her first reaction, that, you know, practical jokester.
Yep.
Yeah, which honestly, now I really wish that we could have seen Chakotay pull some kind of prank like this on her. And
give
then,
me some personality.
You know, maybe she fell for it the first time. You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. We won't get fooled again.
Yeah, that scene bothers me so much. The scene where they go into the cargo bay and they're both wearing phasers. Like, if it comes down to it,
like,
we're going to shoot.
Really?
Like any of the other shows, like, take Enterprise, which didn't make it to season 6, and Archer and T'Pol had a much more adversarial relationship than Chakotay and Janeway ever did, and I think by the end of that series, they would have never gone into that situation with such low amount of evidence, or, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's so frustrating that you've worked with this person for 6 years, and you have one conversation with someone, and all of a sudden you're ready to shoot them in the back?
It totally goes against everything else that happens between the two of them in this episode, where, it tears down all this so-called implicit trust that they have, the dinner, and everything else. I do love the ending, though, with the, you know, the slightly poisoned coffee, maybe.
Right.
Where they conclude it. I think that's very Voyager, but back to what you're saying, it just doesn't ring true.
I think this is where we talk about sometimes how Voyager's lack of attention to continuity hurts the series. And you can look at that in one way and say that lack of attention to continuity, like how many torpedoes is the ship carrying versus how many have they used and where are they getting the torpedoes from? That's the kind of stuff that, you know, I personally can overlook. I'm not that concerned about that because I'm not that into the I'm not the nitpicker, you know, I'm not the person who reads the Nitpicker's Guide to Star Trek because I'm more interested in the actual stories. But I think this is a case where it does hurt the stories a bit because what they so often do is that one story in isolation, they will write the characters however they need to be for that one individual story to work. But because you're watching an entire series, you think that if this is the only story that was ever written for Voyager, okay, maybe it would make sense. But
right.
I'm not buying the fact that Janeway and Chakotay are both going to arm themselves with phasers and then go down to the cargo bay. And first of all, that because they're suspicious of each other. And then secondly, you know they're never going to fire the phasers at each other.
No,
it doesn't make any sense
not.
That they would ever consider doing that. So that's where I think you have to at least pay attention to your character development continuity and write it so that it makes sense to the viewer in the sixth season so that the story, you don't pull people out of the story. You know, if you want to build suspicion, it has to be reasonable to the viewer that what's going on could actually be happening in the first place.
Yeah, I totally agree.
The thing is, it's not even just neglect from the writers. I feel like it's almost patronization, especially at the end of that scene when they're walking out of the cargo bay and they look at each other and like, let's not put this in our reports. Kind of like a wink and a nod to the people that are watching, like, we're never going to address this again. This is never going to affect anything. Yeah. And it's like, come on, you just, oh, it just, it's, it was a really frustrating.
We're Star Trek fiving this.
It's a thing where Seven forgot about the ultimate conspirators, Janeway and Chakotay, tampering with all evidence.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I did think one thing that was natural for the Voyager story was when Chakotay went to speak to B'Elanna about this, because, you know, that was sort of his conscience about, like, you know, this is what I'm thinking. And I mean, I thought that sure. was very natural about the way their characters work together.
Right. Well, you know what? If this story would have existed maybe in season two, where they honestly could have and should have brought up more Maquis and Starfleet tension, this would have worked a lot better. And I think we would have believed the mistrust a little more. Oh, and so you would know yeah. that Chakotay is going to B'Elanna not just because she is a good friend, but also because that's his ally as a Maquis. So it would work on two levels. Whereas here, it's so weak. Like you said, Chris, it's just it doesn't make sense at this point that they're even trying to bring this up half-heartedly.
At this point, like, I agree that Chakotay and B'Elanna talking to each other in that way does make sense for their characters and their past history. But I do feel that at this point, B'Elanna would have been more like, oh, come on, Chakotay, seriously, you really believe yeah. that? That's just right. Seven and one of her crazy yeah. Borg things.
And the Maquis is gone at this point, right? I mean,
yeah, that's
annihilated.
Yeah, they know that their cause is gone.
So much for that conspiracy, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And do they ever explain, because I know Seven is, you know, malfunctioning, quote unquote, but does it ever address, like, Seven, you just told us two other stories, you know, 3 hours ago, you know, does Seven supposed to be conscious of the fact that she told, like, three other theories at this point?
I don't think Seven ever herself acknowledges that she's using the same evidence. Like, I mean, she tells the story to Chakotay, she tells the story to Janeway. And Janeway tells Chakotay, she showed me the same evidence, but she implicated you.
Right.
But as far as Seven herself goes, I think she's mentally just spiraling. Like, it's overload.
Yeah.
It's too much information. And I don't know, because she's not a drone anymore. And of course, that's kind of the point of the whole thing here. If she were a drone still, I would say that her system is just malfunctioning,
right,
as you said, and it's just spiraling and she has no control over it. It's just like a computer malfunctioning. But of course, she's not a drone anymore, so she's just going out of her mind.
Yeah,
I suppose.
Now, and answer me a question, guys, because I honestly do not know the answer to this. Why was Seven doing this in the first place? Was that ever explained? Did I just miss it? I mean, I figured it was just because she can.
Yeah, I think that was it.
I felt like it was explained. Yeah, it's kind of that. I felt like it was explained at the very beginning, though not in so many words. It's just that Seven, you know, she still is closer to her drone life at this point, I guess, than she is by the end of the series. Of course, she becomes more human as you go, and it accelerates a little bit. I think at this point, she still hasn't really come to terms with the fact that she doesn't have all the capabilities of a drone anymore. And, you know, she tends to be arrogant. She thinks that she can do everything better. And she just feels like she can help the ship by analyzing all of this information, because the crew can't possibly do it themselves. And maybe the computer can do it faster than her, but she thinks that because she's a life form and not a computer, she can find stuff in it that the computer can't. And so she's trying to help the ship by downloading it all into her mind. What does she call it? She calls it a cortical processing subunit. That's what she's reconstructing, what's on a Borg cube. So I think she's trying to be helpful at first, and then it just snowballs. And she just thinks she can do a better job than the crew or the computer.
Yeah, that's exactly what I picked up on, because she says the way that they collect information and analyze it is inefficient, and that this way would work better. So I figured that that's just what she was doing.
Maybe she thought she was going to find something that would help them get home faster.
Yeah.
You know, there's something in the data, or they would find a wormhole, or they would find something. Maybe they'll find a catapult.
While we're talking about alcoves, this is more of a general Voyager question. She's not a full Borg anymore. How can she possibly sleep standing up? She's not a horse. I don't understand. She needs rest, doesn't she?
I got nothing, man. I've wondered the same thing myself.
It doesn't make any sense.
Why would you sleep in a real bed? But I guess those cortical nodes of hers need basically her little dock, you know, much like an iPhone needs its connecting charger.
Maybe the alcove reclines and we never see it. When we see it, it's always pre-reclining position or post-reclining position.
But that's then right. When she wakes up, she's still standing.
So it would be a lazy Borg.
A lazy Borg.
I want one of those now.
Those are awesome. She's got the giant television across from her, so
yeah,
she can watch the games.
Yeah, sink into that baby.
She's got like the 5.1 surround sound right in the headrest there.
She's got it. Yeah, she's got it all going on. She's watching Orange is the New Black, and she's going, you know, that cook looks familiar.
She ought to come up with some conspiracy theory about that.
Now, I had a question, because Daniel and I, of course, as always, we're talking about Shades of Grey. Would we consider this a clip episode?
You know what? I think this is almost as close to a clip episode as Voyager gets. Because there's three that come to mind. There's this episode. You could say, I take that back. Two. I was thinking Macrocosm, but I don't know why. Sorry, blanked out.
Biceps.
I was blinded by her biceps, totally. Yes.
So shiny.
And Shattered. But that's not really a clips episode, because it's not actually using footage. They're just going back into different time periods. So I would say this is the closest thing we get to a clips episode, and I thought the clips were very well utilized.
Yeah, I don't consider this a clip show, because a clip show is when you're trying to save money and you're just going to throw clips and you're going to put together like a really, really thin, like one page story to facilitate the use of the clips to fill the time. Where here they're using clips, but they're using them for a specific reason to tell another story. So to me, no, not a clip show.
Excuse me, Chris, are you saying that the attacking tree plant thing from Shades of Grey isn't a compelling story on its own? You don't think it needed more than one page to set it up?
You guys have been listening to Trek FM for a long time. Yeah,
not a clip this is show. More, it's not clips. It's a flashback. It's flashbacks.
Yeah, just like that episode flashback where they use clips.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't the episode called Clips.
Yes, but that was original footage, so it wasn't really flashbacks. but they were back in time.
Yeah, they should do some series should do an episode called Clips.
That's with a Z instead of an S.
Oh, that's MTV very 90s. Would get on that so hard.
It's very 90s with a Z, yeah.
Yeah, cool beans.
Cool beans.
That's when all the Trek that we watched was.
With a Z. So.
That's true.
Cool beans with a Z, right, Char? Yeah.
Of course, how else?
We'll get our dial-up modem, get on our bulletin board, and talk about the latest Trek episode.
Oh, I was thinking AOL chat myself.
Oh, nice.
You can use color in your text.
Oh my goodness, you're right. I forgot completely about that. That was so exciting. And you
mentioned the slappers. I came of age in the 90s. Those are my golden days, yeah.
Although there was a lot of good stuff that came out of those AOL chats, though. A lot of good Star Trek stuff with the writers and such.
That's true. Yeah, it was good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on towards the end here and just talk about Janeway and Seven's relationship a bit, because that's what it all comes to here towards the end. We get the touching moment. You know, if this had been an NBC show in the 90s, they would have said, next time on a very special Star Trek Voyager. Janeway recalls every event in her life using the exact star date.
Yeah, with one flaw, one little mistake, but Seven corrects her, and it's a profound, poignant moment.
It was. It was that correction that was the turning point, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, then you know what? After the show, you'd have that PSA segment. You know, when your friends try to correct you, just be graceful about it. Don't defend yourself. Don't get angry. Just let it happen.
Now, Daniel and I were talking about this in a prior podcast about the 80s moment. And so I can see Seven coming up. In this episode, I tried to download too much information in your heads. Try not to study too much in school. Try to divert yourselves. Play with your friends. Go see your family.
Information, too, can be a drug.
Just say no, kids.
Star Trek Voyager.
Coming home to save the day.
But the thing with, so Seven, a lot of people complain about Seven coming on the show and that Seven gets too much attention.
Especially in that outfit.
They do overuse her in stories, but I've always felt that Seven was a very good addition to Voyager because Janeway needed someone to play against for the character. And it wasn't going to be Chakotay because the writers were clearly not going to write Chakotay in any way where he would stand up to Janeway and they could have any truly meaningful discussions or disagreements or learning moments or anything together. But they did that with Seven. And the Seven-Janeway relationship, to me, it's an interesting one because Janeway's kind of like the mother to the crew. In a real way, especially because she feels responsible for stranding them there in the first place, for one thing. So she feels like she has to get them home and take care of them. But Seven, even though she's an adult, is very much like a child as she comes out of being a drone and becomes human again. And it really feels like Janeway really seems like the mother to Seven. But at the same time, I think Seven does help Janeway to think about herself a bit more as well. So Char, as the Voyager expert, how do you feel about Janeway's Seven relationship in general? And then how do you feel like this episode played into that?
Okay, in general, yes, I do think that it was a good thing. I think it was good conflict that, as you said, is not going to come from any other character on the ship. And I, to some extent, do enjoy the whole kind of, mothering aspect. I mean, this is Janeway's newest pet project. First it was Tom Paris, and then I guess it goes to Seven. Maybe I'm missing something in the middle. I'm not entirely sure. I don't remember.
Well, where does Michael come in, her Irish holographic boyfriend?
Oh, that's... I believe that is a little bit after this episode in season 6.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit of Kes. All right.
Yeah, I mean, Kes kind of had a little bit of a mother-daughter relationship, too. I mean, it wasn't nearly the same extent because mostly it was kind of like, hey, I need some advice. Will you help me? And of course, then Janeway does help her. So they have that sense together. But Janeway with Seven is much more, I need to teach you a lesson. And I'm going to teach you several lessons. And I'm going to guide you. And I'm going to help you through this process of becoming more human. Did they overdo it? Absolutely. Was it good? Yes.
Such a reluctant.
I just feel like we got so much of it that by this point, I'm starting to get a little tired of it, but it was utilized well in this episode. That's just my opinion, though. What do you guys think?
Well, I just thought it was really odd how Janeway was reacting to Seven in that shuttle. You know, as you said, if it had been any other person, she would have beamed to that shuttle and been like, you know, put down this force field and whatever, whatever. But she's just kind of like slinking around and be like, Seven, you know, I'm like, I just wrote like odd Janeway in my nose because I'm like, she's just kind of like relaxed and has this kind of airy tone as she's talking to Seven. It's like, you know, we can take all the time in the world here in the Delta, you know, Delta Flyers, just you and me. We, whatever, however long it takes to have this argument, we're no rush at all.
You know what I think Seven taught Janeway was the virtue of patience. So maybe that's kind of where that's coming from. But then, you know what? Janeway kind of has this light air about her in the whole episode. I mean, she's drinking coffee on the bridge and all that. I mean, Picard would never do that, right? He would never be sipping his Earl Grey on the bridge.
No, that's
no, but Sulu would.
So she's really relaxed. Yeah, Sulu did, but I mean, that's his prerogative.
But then he broke all the china. So I mean, that's...
Right? And then you've got that mess. And then that's a slipping hazard. If the ship is shaking and then you hit the T... And not to mention the broken china.
Well, you know, they're like, we're going to break the china. And he's like, break it apart then.
That's why we don't see Christian Slater more in the movie, because he cut his foot on the broken cup at the beginning.
You're just asking for a trip to sickbay with that kind of a hazard.
Especially, you know, you're always, you know, there are Klingon moons exploding nearby. You're always, the ship is always shaking. You're probably going to fall right onto it.
Yeah, shockwaves. I mean, what do you think is going to happen when you hit that?
So do we explain Janeway's behavior in this episode as just being over-caffeinated? Did she hit her limit finally?
Yes, I think
or
so.
Or the whole series?
But definitely this episode, I think she was just a little higher than her tolerance. Never mind the fact that her tolerance is about warp 10, so yeah.
I have a question for you guys also. Because we're talking about Janeway being on the Delta Flyer with Seven. Did you guys also find it weird that after Seven lowered the force field, instead of flying back to the ship, they both beam out and leave the Delta Flyer unmanned in space?
Yeah.
I'm so
Why do they do that?
Tom could not have been happy about that.
Yeah.
That's his baby.
Well, maybe there's a standing rule that only Tom can pilot it. And so, like, the entire time that Kathy's talking to Seven, she's like, Tom is going to be so pissed. All right, beam up. Beam up, Seven. Just beam up. Don't ask. You've never seen
Tom.
He gets angry. He'll sick B'Elanna on you.
You know what it is? I'm sure everybody here has had like a breakthrough moment with someone that's close to them in their lives like that. And then afterwards, it's kind of awkward and you don't know what to say. And so they didn't want to sit next to each other and pilot there. They're just like, let's just get away from each other. We just need some time alone.
Sit there and do the post-flight checklist.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And you know what? Honestly, yeah, if I were Tom, I would have been really pissed just at the fact that she took out the Delta Flyer in the first place without any permission.
That is a no.
How dare she?
Yeah, just another example of really poor security on Starfleet ships where it's super easy to steal shuttlecrafts or use the transporter or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't trying to tractor beam it or anything.
If you are like the person whose console is the readout for that kind of information, block it.
Tuvok.
Block it first and then tell your commanding officer, because they're always going to try to tell you to block it. So just say, cancel.
Can't have that.
Well, the real problem is, of course, just the use of 4-digit security codes all over the ship. The same with, you know, like with an iPhone, you know, 4-digit security code. It's not that secure. They hadn't installed the fingerprint scanners yet on Voyager.
Not yet.
And the other problem is that, as we know, Starfleet's 4-digit codes are all 0000.
That's right. And you know what? I have the iPhone S. If you don't get your fingerprint like right, if it can't read it, after 3 times you have to put in your numerical code for your security lock, Well, I mean, come on. 000 destruct zero is so easy. Anybody can do that.
Yeah, and
then your phone blows up.
And Seven has those gloves, right? Wouldn't it be really hard for her to use a thumbprint scanner? She's got those weird silvery things on the tip of her fingers.
Yeah. That's
Which
true.
Reminds me, Char, did you try it yet? Like I told you should try. Does it work on cat paws? Did you
try it? No, I haven't done that yet. I need to try that. See if my cat can unlock
the
phone.
Not the original series episode. No.
No.
No, no, no. Not cat's paw.
Not cat's paw.
No. Teddy, get the phone, sweetie.
Runs over, puts his foot down on top of it.
Yeah. Meow.
Okay, last thing while we're on the shuttle here, before we go into final thoughts. Janeway, and we mentioned it already, Janeway being able to recall all these past events by stardate.
Yes.
This is one of the things that it bugs me in the writing of Voyager, because all it is the writers go, oh, this is Star Trek, everything stardate. Let's just have the character say, stardate, so-and-so, so-and-so, I did this. And it's easy to do that, and you feel like you're writing a Star Trek script, and you feel like the audience is going to go, oh, stardate, yeah, everything's stardate. But if you stop for just half a second and think yourself, like if I asked you what happened over the past 2 years, could you give me the exact days, you know, May 2nd, 2012? No. Nobody does that. Make it realistic.
I will
take more out of this conversation between Janeway and Seven if Janeway just says, 3 months after we got you off the Borg cube,
right?
I came to you and I said, just please do that in the writing.
I do.
Yeah, come on.
I have to rebuttal that a little bit. I have a friend.
Okay, good.
Who actually has an uncanny ability to remember dates. Like she would remember like a day that I started my first job 10 years ago, like just randomly would be like, oh, that was on October the 5th. And it's really bizarre and it's really strange. And she's not 100% right, but it's like really weird. So this didn't bother me so much.
And also you have to remember how much coffee she had during this episode. Coffee is a brain activator. And so
that's true. She was basically like, so that's making her like a date recollection savant.
She was basically like Barclay in the nth degree at this point.
The other thing Daniel didn't tell us, which explains this, is that his friend's name is Shannon O'Donnell.
Oh.
Hey.
Wow.
It's Booyah. Genetic.
She's all about progress.
Sweet. When's that millennial gate coming up, huh? Isn't that supposed to be done by now? It's been 13 years.
The economy's kind of in a funk.
All right, guys. Well, we've passed an hour discussing the Voyager conspiracy, so let's wrap up with final thoughts. And Daniel, how about you? What are your final thoughts on this episode?
Okay, it's all right. the thing is, you mentioned the episode, and I didn't remember it. I didn't know what the Voyager conspiracy was about, which I guess I should have, since it's got conspiracy in the title. It's pretty obvious now, but
I wish you were on.
It's not one of, to me, it's not one of the most memorable Voyager episodes. It's not bad. I didn't hate it. I got really frustrated by the scene in the cargo bay with Chakotay and Janeway ready to shoot each other. But it's not terrible. It's kind of fun, well, I guess. I don't mind. I like Seven. I'm a Seven fan, so it's good for that. And the Seven Janeway stuff gets a little old after a while. I feel like they have the same argument every other episode, and I think maybe they could have like made her interact with other characters sometimes, but besides maybe the Doctor every now and again. But I enjoyed it. I guess if I had to give it a rating, I would give it an abandoned Delta flyer.
Great rating.
Very good. How about you, Philip?
Well, I mean, I do remember this episode, watched it again, of course, but I think it's one of those episodes where I did think it was a fun episode, because I remember being like, oh, that was kind of, yeah, and they had the thing. But watching it this time, I think, as we said, there's just so many, at least to me, so many inconsistencies, you know, whether it's the Janeway or Chakotay characters, or whether it's just the explanations themselves, that it did kind of throw me out of it. But, you know, it's one of those, you know, if I just think of it as a standalone episode, it was, you know, amusing and fun, and to see all the different theories, and then the little, you know, touching moment at the end and all that. So, but I guess for my rating, it would probably have to be 4 unexplained tractor beams out of a mysterious number.
Ooh.
Sounds good.
Are they Cardassian? I guess we'll never know.
Maybe.
We'll never know.
Depends on which version of the story you want to come up with.
Oh, of course, that was a last-minute problem with the episode. Didn't they say the caretaker put ships back? I'm like, how come we've never heard about the Delta Quadrant before then if they did that? Oh, well.
People didn't know they were in the Delta Quadrant. They just knew they went somewhere and they came back.
Oh, see, Gilligan's Island. Okay.
That's right. How about you, Shar?
Yeah, I'm pretty much on par with you guys. I think this is an entertaining episode, but the story does have its problems. I remember liking this episode a lot more the very first time I watched it, because it is an entertaining story. And even though I never really did buy the whole conspiracy theory thing, it was still interesting to watch how it was playing out. But the more times that I've watched it, the less I like it. So I think I'm going to give it 5 cups of coffee on the bridge.
Maybe you should stop watching now, though, so it doesn't go any lower than that.
Right, because then with each rating, I decrease by maybe like a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
I'll just have to drink some of Naomi's vodka.
Then you'll like it a lot more.
Yeah! This thing's great!
You know what? That makes a lot of sense. Maybe Chakotay is a bad guy.
I'm going to pull out my phaser now.
Yeah. Well, you guys have said pretty much everything that I would say about it. It's a fun episode to watch if you just watch it as a standalone story. It's an interesting take on what if. I kind of wish that Voyager had the guts to take something like this and say, you know what? 7 just uncovered the actual reality of this show. And for the next season and a half, it was all about Janeway's secret mission. It would have been a totally different show. It would have been, I don't know if it would have been good or not, but it would have been interesting.
Star Trek Section 31.
Something unpredictable. That would have been kind of cool.
Or like, it's like the Truman Show, where this whole thing has been a big ruse.
Episode, they pan the camera back and we see all the lights and the other cameras and the boom mics and everything. And find out
Rick
that the
Berman,
whole thing
Brian is. And Braga and Jerry Taylor sitting there.
Everyone walks off the bridge. They go back to their trailers out on the light.
Voyager's on a string.
Then they shoot fireworks over the set.
I just thought Tom Paris would wake up as Nick Larcano and be like, I just had the strangest dream. Go back to bed, Nick. Okay.
I don't know. I enjoy the episode just to watch it as a standalone. I probably also do enjoy it less now than I did when it first aired. The writing leaves a lot to be desired if you're looking for any kind of continuity, but oh well. I'm going to give it 7,000 photonic fleas.
Wow.
Ooh. All right.
They will gunk up your system.
They really will. All right. So before we go, guys, Dan and Philip, of course, you guys both do the same show together, Earl Grey. But Philip, tell everyone where they can find you around the internets.
They can find me on Twitter as NC Public Servant, NC like North Carolina, where I tweet about Star Trek, of course, and Doctor Who and anything else that strikes my fancy. And of course, they can read my, oddly enough, TNG focused articles on the Trek FM site.
No way.
Yeah, I do like it slightly.
You like TNG? Really?
Yeah, I'm getting into it.
We should talk about that sometime.
Okay.
Well, where can people find you, Dan? And where can they find you guys if they want to hear you talk about TNG?
Trek.fm/Earl Grey. Go there now. Episode 1's
out.
Rate
us on iTunes.
Episode 1 is out. Episode 2 coming soon to a listening device near you. If they want to find me personally, 1UpDan on Twitter. That is the number 1, not the word. And I will also be tweeting random nerdy, dorky, Star Trek-y, Doctor Who-y, Harry Potter-y things. So you can find me there.
Yeah, and we're looking forward to Earl Grey coming out on data node form, but we're still working on it.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, we're also going to distribute it on pads, but it's just one episode per pad.
That's right.
So after a year, you're going to have about 50 of those things stacked up in the corner. You have to plug your headphones into each one to listen to the show.
It's like, you know, how Netflix used to be. You can subscribe and we'll send you one episode and then you send it back and we'll send you the next one.
There you go.
We send you a pad in the mail. You listen, you send the pad back. Or you can have someone carry it by hand.
Right.
Trek FM Studios.
Oh, 24th century technology. You're so silly.
Well, thanks again for joining us today, guys. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Chris, I don't know about you, but I had a lot of fun talking Voyager with the Earl Grey guys.
It was fun. I know that's unexpected for people, but, you know, those of us at Trek FM here, we do have our favorite series, but we love all of Star Trek. We all know all of Star Trek, so we can talk about any series we want, as we showed today, because did we talk about the original series? I think we talked about just about every series at some point in the discussion today.
We certainly came close, if in fact we didn't.
We did in the news anyway, so.
That's true, that's true. We do it all here on the Ready Room, don't we?
We really do. Yeah, so it was a lot of fun. This episode was, when we decided to do this, I was kind of remembering, okay, yeah, that's that kind of conspiracy, because it's in the title, of course, episode. It'll be fun to do, and I hadn't seen it in quite a while. And I still enjoyed it, so it was fun. But, Char, you know, as much fun as it was to talk about Janeway's incredible ability to remember dates and Seven's crazy conspiracy theories, it's not the only thing we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. So here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
Aliens of Deep Space Nine.
That's a really good question. I honestly never even thought to question the Vorta's idea of their own existence and whether or not it was, you know, just a story.
Earl Grey.
The 1701D.
So correct me if I'm wrong, it's been a little while since I've seen Generations, but is it possible also that before it was used as stellar cartography, it might have been Cerebro?
The Ready Room.
Homefront and Paradise Lost.
See, that's the kind of guy I want to vote for. Yeah. If he says, I don't want to do this, please don't vote for me, that job looks really hard, I'm going to go, I like this guy.
To the journey!
Collective commentary.
Right, no. The Borg does okay. not...
They don't vote create babies. Like that. They All have right. to assimilate.
Because that, I just thought was strange. Like, okay, so one of the people they assimilated was pregnant, or... Okay.
Commentary, Trek stars.
Roswell.
And that was what Kadams was going for in season one. He saw it as more of a metaphor than anything. He didn't really care about the actual science fiction behind it. And he said that he got a note from a network exec which just said, aliens, aliens, aliens.
Warp 5.
The Sphere Builders.
And it is a good concept. I think and obviously the reasons it was introduced were more because of the studio and wanting that looking forward perspective, you know, getting ahead of the 24th century.
Trek news and views.
The Watchers, the Watchers.
Which also brings into question Dr. Crusher, because, you know, Pulaski can put a new heart in him, but Beverly Crusher can't even heal an arrow wound.
Literary Treks.
Assignment Earth Comics.
I kind of liked it in that it picks up from Assignment Earth, the Star Trek episode, where we find out that Gary Seven has been sent there to find out why the two agents who were supposed to be stopping that missile launch can't do it. What happened to them?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of those shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have a new show for you every day of the week, and some days we even have two shows for you. And don't forget to check out our new TNG show, Earl Grey, with Philip and Daniel, as well as Darren, who was not with us today, and get your cup of Earl Grey. And you'll find all of our shows in iTunes, on Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune. You can download or stream from the website directly. Many, many ways for you to get our shows, so go check them all out. We hope you enjoyed the Trek Talk. Now, Char, some people are enjoying the Ready Room, apparently, because we had two reviews left in iTunes this week in the U.S. store. Now, the first one here It says, love the rotation scheme. Gave us 5 stars, but you know what? I really think this guy is a little bit biased, sure.
Based on the name that he gave, he might be just a tad biased. Yes.
That's right. Dr. Sci-Fi, who of course is Darren, who I just mentioned, who co-hosts Earl Grey. But, you know, he enjoys the Ready Room. He's only on here on occasion, so most of the time he's listening to other people talk. And Dr. Sci-Fi slash Darren says, I really enjoy how the Ready Room rotates through the 5 main series of Star Trek. It keeps it fresh and exciting to tune in each week. And, you know, I hope everyone enjoys that as well. In the early days of the Ready Room, we just kind of picked episodes and topics here and there. And eventually, I don't know, around show 30 or so, we got into this rotation. And I really enjoy it because it just helps us to make sure that we cover all of Star Trek and we don't get caught up in one series or the other too much. And I enjoy it myself because it gives me a chance to talk about series that I don't talk about on other shows. So I hope everyone enjoys that as well.
Yeah, I do. I know I do. I mean, I know that every time a Voyager episode comes up, chances are, unless I'm dead or really highly incapacitated, I get to be on the Ready Room.
That's right. So thanks for that, Dr. Sci-Fi. We really appreciate the kind words. And also Gary4278, which sounds like a Borg designation. Gary4278 says that the Ready Room is an intelligent podcast. Christopher is a delightful host and has equally engaging guests. And I appreciate the kind words there, Gary, but you know, it is the guests. If I were doing this show by myself, I don't think anyone would want to listen. So it is all the guests who come on the show. We have a great extensive panel of people who rotate in and out every week. And I'm glad you enjoy that. Gary says, professional sound quality and editing, smart and insightful commentary. I really enjoy all of the Trek FM podcasts. So Gary, thank you for that. It sounds like Char, he also enjoys To the Journey.
Hey, I'm all for that. To the Journey, by the way.
There you go. I was going to say, I'm disappointed, Char. You missed your own show, screaming your own name.
No. Not missing my cue. No. Yeah, that was a very nice compliment. And I kind of have a theory now about Gary4278. What if Gary 7 got assimilated by the Borg, and this is his offspring, one of millions?
I think so. That's part of my canon now. You know, everyone knows I have my personal canon. It's part of my canon. Gary 7 was assimilated by the Borg, became Gary 4278, then traveled back in time and left us a review on iTunes. Makes perfect sense to me.
But yeah, very efficient.
Very efficient. So thank you, Gary, for that review. And to everyone, if you enjoy The Ready Room, please drop by iTunes and leave us a review. We don't ask people to do this so often, but it really does help others find the show in iTunes. So, you know, take a minute, you know, 30 seconds, a minute, drop by, leave us a star rating, leave us a written review. Help other Star Trek fans who don't know about The Ready Room yet, which is almost all Star Trek fans. We're only known to drop in the bucket of all the fans who are out there, and help everyone find the show and join in the conversation each week. And also, if you'd like to contact us and share your thoughts about the Voyager conspiracy or anything we talked about in the news, or if you'd like to send us a general question about Star Trek for questions from the fleet, you can do all that by going to trek.fm/contact. There is a form there. You can choose to send to a show. You can choose the Ready Room. Send us your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you. Also, you can send us a voicemail if you like. You can do that by clicking the tab on the right-hand side of any page. A box will appear. Use your webcam's microphone to record a voicemail, and you can upload it to us as an MP3 file from right there on the site. If you like social media, you can go to facebook.com/trekfm. You'll find us there. You'll also find us on Twitter under username trekfm, tweeting away about Star Trek. And Char, what do people want to find you personally? Where should they go for that?
Well, you can find me with Tristan Riddell and Lori Sears on To the Journey.
To the Journey. I was faster than you, and you're a co-host of that show. Look at that.
Hey now. It's been a long night. In fact, I was recording To the Journey right before I started recording The Ready Room, so I'm just being a podcast fool today.
You can blame it on that if you want. I think you've just had a little too much Naomi Wildman vodka.
That may be true, but maybe I'm also just on information overload and I can't handle myself anymore. It's all just a gibberish. Nothing makes sense anymore.
Maybe
I think
so.
I need to go to my other alcove and regenerate. But anyway, you can find me with those lovely people. We discuss Voyager every week. We discuss any and all topics. So if you like this discussion, you're probably going to like To the Journey. So if you haven't checked that out already, do that. Also, if you want to find me on Twitter, you can do that. I am the profanity, and chat me up.
Sounds good. And if you want to find me, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username, as well as on my personal website at cbrianjones.com. And then elsewhere on the network, you'll find me on Sundays with Matthew Rushing, where we do Literary Treks and we talk about Star Trek books and comics and we interview authors. And then on Monday, you'll find me again with Matthew on The Orb, where we talk about Deep Space Nine exclusively. And on Fridays, you'll find me with Kate Walsh over on Warp 5, where we talk exclusively about Enterprise, and we've had a lot of great guests on there. For you Voyager fans listening, go check out Warp 5. We actually had Robert Duncan McNeil on there a couple of weeks ago to talk about directing Star Trek. We talked about the four episodes of Enterprise that he directed, but we also talked about him directing Voyager as well, you know, plus other things. So even though it's an Enterprise show, there's a lot of general Trek stuff on there as well that you may enjoy. So go check that out.
Great interview, by the way.
Oh, it was great. Robbie was fantastic. He's so much fun to talk to. He's so relaxed and casual and just open about everything. It's a really fascinating discussion if you're into the creative side of Star Trek as well. Yeah. You got to talk to him on Trek News and Views about, God, what was that, like a year and a half ago or something, wasn't it?
It was about a year ago, last year.
Okay, yeah. So a year ago when you guys accosted him, the Delta Angels.
Yes. So.
That was a great interview as well.
All in the good name of Tom Paris Day.
That's right. Tom Paris Day. Boy, people are going to get jealous they don't have their own days. 7 of 9 Day, Tom Paris Day.
There is a 7 of 9 Day.
Oh, I know. That's what I'm saying. You've got that. You've got Tom Paris. I mean, Argyle, poor guy. He wants to know when Argyle Day is coming.
There needs to be an Argyle Day.
It really does. Probably going to be like an Oktoberfest, right? People are just going to be drinking gin and...
I was thinking maybe like he just took it upon himself to take St. Patrick's Day for himself. Instead of green beer, it's green gin.
That's a great idea. I like that. So anyway, go check all that stuff out. And lastly, before we let everyone go, we'd like to ask you to please support our sponsors for this week. Your support of our sponsors is very important for making it possible for us to bring the Ready Room to you. And our sponsor for this week's show is Squarespace. They are the best hosting CMS that you'll find anywhere online that allows you to create a beautiful blog, website, portfolio, an online store, anything else you can imagine. Don't forget that URL I told you to go register. Char wasn't listening. I think it's still available. Go get that and do it all at squarespace.com and choose the annual plan to get that free domain registration. And then when you check out, use offer code TREK9 to get 10% off your purchase. And of course, you can get that 14-day free trial beforehand and try it all out. And then I know you're going to sign up because you're going to love it. I do. And we really thank Squarespace for their support of Trek FM and the Ready Room. And also, if you would personally like to support what we're doing here, you can help us cover the costs of production, storage, and bandwidth by going to trek.fm/donate. We have 8 alien-themed badges and art prints there. 8 different aliens available as badges or art prints. You can mix and match which ones you want, and there are different levels of contributions that you can make, so choose the one that's right for you. Let us know which aliens you want, and we will send them right off to you by subspace. Although we don't have access to Borg transwarp conduits, so we are at the mercy of the postal service in your local country. But help us out. Go check those out. You're going to love them. They're great illustrations by Toba Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you see on our website. And again, you'll find it all at trek.fm/donate. And we really appreciate your support of Trek FM.
Now, Chris, I have a question for you. Are we going to start offering the photonically attracted flea alien photos?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm going to talk to Isaac about that. See if he can do an illustration of a photonic flea. If so, maybe we'll make that like a special bonus badge or something. It's a good idea.
I think after this episode, that would be a huge hit.
I think it really would be. All right, Char, well, I've got to go. I'm going to go back down and talk to Seven. You know, I've been hearing all these rumors this week about our head coach at Alabama, Nick Saban, going to Texas to become the next coach of the Texas Longhorns. And I think it's all just ridiculous. But, you know, maybe Seven has some sort of conspiracy theory that'll help me follow the pieces from that region in Texas to Nick Saban's agent and find out how, you know, maybe I should have something to be worried about.
Well, while you do that, I'm going to go have some coffee with Captain Janeway. And it's time to stick a Tetrion power cell in this one, because the Ready Room is done.
Recording. Right.
Coffee pants. All right.
All right. I'd like to see the Gap commercial or the Old Navy commercial for coffee pants.
It would just be a bunch of teenage kids dancing around to swing music.
Right. And all the pants would be different shades of brown. Some would be lighter, some would be darker.
Right. You would have espresso, latte, mocha. Yeah, that's all. Cappuccino Dopio. Foam.
Cappuccino foam. That's
pumpkin
white.
Spice
that's
latte white in association with Starbucks.
Yeah. Well, then if you come to Japan, you can have the matcha latte as well. So it'd be kind of a light green color.
Nice. All right. Perfect.
Okay. I like Why don't you lead us into the outro?
All right.